Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
So far, the 2012 election seems like it's been about private equity, and you didn't build that. It's been about swing voters in Virginia and Ohio and Florida, about vice presidential speculation and new political stars within both parties. But really, the 2012 election may be about data and how the campaigns are using it to target Americans more precisely than ever for votes in cash. Mika Sifri is the co-founder of Personal Democracy Media, which studies the intersection of tech and politics. He told us off the air that 2008 was the year of big social and that 2012 is the year of big data. Mika, welcome back to WNYC.
Always great to be here, Brooke.
So, first of all, what do we mean by data and what makes it big?
Well, there's all kinds of information that's important to campaigns as they go about this gigantic task of finding and moving voters to the polls, and we're talking about tens of millions of individuals and literally billions of data points that are collectible now. Why this election is about big data is because the sophistication and spread of the information that they can collect and that third parties are also collecting, selling, and sharing with the campaigns and with the party organizations is really kind of mind-boggling. There's voter data. States collect that where you have to register to vote. They get your name, address, age, and so on. Campaigns and party organizations layer into that something they call the voter file, which is information about your past voting behavior, if somebody knocked on your door, how you responded. These voter files become extremely valuable. The fact that the Obama campaign, for example, is running on a reelection on top of millions and millions of individual data points that they collected last time around gives them a bit of an advantage.
But it goes beyond voter behavior, right? I mean, do they have access to what we buy in the supermarket?
Well, not directly, but they can purchase that information, or they can work with third-party vendors, ad networks, and political targeting firms that specialize in getting that consumer information and matching it up, for example, to the cookies that you get put on your computer when you visit a website. So, for example, if you go to the Obama or Romney campaign website and you don't even sign up for anything, if you are allowing cookies to be placed on your browser, which is the default setting that most people never change, now they've got a cookie on your browser saying you came and maybe you clicked here or there. And then you may, as you're browsing elsewhere on the web,
they can follow you.
They can, in effect, serve ads up targeted to you and even to the types of interests you may have. If you are looking at parenting sites, they may send you ads that focus on, you know, parenting issues, education, and so on. So it's very
sophisticated. Let me ask the listeners, have you noticed more targeted pitches from the political campaigns in this election? How does that make you feel? Would you give us a call and tell us at 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692? Tell us what your experience, your personal experience of big data has been. When you talk about the shift, Mika, from big social to big data, what do you mean?
Well, what I mean is that we originally thought the technology would empower more people to participate in the process, have a voice, have influence in the process. And social networking is really an example of that. We see it disrupting power systems all over the world. The Arab Spring is an example of people in part using these new social networking tools like Facebook and Twitter to empower themselves to rise up against dictatorships. We saw this in 2004 and 2008, the Dean campaign, the Obama campaign. Also, empowering and tapping into places where people were using the web to empower themselves on behalf of the campaign. 2012, they've now refined this to a science, and it's a very expensive science. It's not something that ordinary people can do. You have to be a big multi-million-dollar campaign organization to hire data scientists, predictive modelers, and so on, to really refine how you make sense of all of this minutia. And ordinary people are not doing that. It's really interesting to see how it used to be that the campaigns were using the web in a way to connect people to each other so that people could talk about the things they were passionate about and take action. And now the campaigns are doing much less of that and much more of figuring out how to either manipulate people based on what messages will be best tailored to them or direct their volunteer activity in the most precise way. Now, if you think the only job of a campaign is to win, and that's how people in this business justify what they do, then everything they're doing makes sense, right? The technology enables it. The money is there. And by God, they are going to fight for the very last, you know, micro percentage of the vote that they can squeeze out in Ohio, wherever it is that this race is going to come down to.
Okay, so big social has given way to big data by way of big money.
Yes.
I mean, there's tons more money in this campaign. And at some point, all the advertising availabilities in the swing states get bought.
Right.
There's still money left over. Is this where it's going?
Well, we're also seeing the advertising availabilities online get bought out, too, not just TV and broadcast, but some of the best online real estate has already been bought up into the fall. So where one of the places where it's going, and this is where the Obama campaign is doing much more than the Romney campaign, is figuring out how to put tools into people's hands, volunteers and staff, that will enable them to create, I almost think of it as like the Harry Potter's Marauder's map, you know, that map that he had that showed where everybody was in the castle. Well, if you take the Obama mobile app, right, which they just launched, put it on your iPhone or put it on your Android phone. That is designed to make it easy for you to call up information about your neighbors. And the app will give you detailed information, the name, their age, and their address, and then a script to use as you go knock on their door. And as you do this and you enter information back, all that gets pumped back live into the Obama campaign servers, where the people who are running their field operation will get close to a real-time view of what's working as people knock on doors. And that could be very powerful.
And we should say, even though there's a lot of news today about the Obama campaign having a lot less money than the Romney campaign, the digital department in the Romney campaign is the largest unit. There, within the Obama campaign, is the largest unit.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
There is a drop-in tech center in San Francisco where people can volunteer their time coding and developing new software. There's a digital director in every swing state. I don't know if that is true of the Romney campaign.
Yeah, they're staffing up, but they have to catch up. They're nowhere as close. The big difference is Obama has been building this infrastructure on top of what they did 4 years ago. And may very well be what gives them a couple of extra percentage points down as this race goes down to the wire.
Let's take a call from Lori in Greenwich, Connecticut. Hi, Lori.
Hi, I'm Lori. Lori, and I live in Greenwich, Connecticut, and I'm a registered Republican. I don't know why, but that's just the way it was because of my family. Terrible. But I love Obama. I should not say that, right? But anyway, I voted for Obama last time. So, but I didn't give money. So I gave money this time, just recently, and in about last 2 weeks, and I have been inundated with data from Obama, which is fine.
You've been getting data. They're not getting it from you. Well, you don't know if they're getting it from you or not. They probably are. But you're saying that they're flooding you with emails or what?
Yes, they're very nice, very nice, very nice, very nice emails. Which I expected because I gave the money online. There's a thing, you know, I felt guilty because my friend's son worked for Obama in the last campaign, and I felt that I should. So, but I'm
but
not
Lori,
careful.
how tailored is this data that you're getting?
A lot.
They know you. You can tell that they know you.
Oh yes.
Like
what?
And
they want me to join the ground.
But sure. Give me an example of how you know that they know you.
Okay. The scariest thing, not scary, but I'm a registered Republican. So today I think we even have a primary for a governor, a Republican governor who's running. And I got invited to a picnic with a handwritten letter, to a Democratic picnic in Greenwich, Connecticut. I think that's pretty amazing.
Yeah, and that's a great example, Lori, of exactly why data and micro-targeting can be such a powerful tool for a campaign. One of the tricky things they have to figure out and do well, which they don't always do well because databases are not necessarily easy things to work with when they come in separate silos, but when you made that donation, the field operation in Connecticut finds out, and they probably got a staffer.
Immediately, I mean, this was, I only did this, I would say, 2 weeks ago.
Yep.
Yeah, it was cool.
But there's a reason for that, which is that campaigns know that the best time to respond to someone is right after they make that donation, right after you volunteer. If you, for example, called the campaign office or emailed and said, hey, I'm willing to volunteer, and nobody called back for a week, you'd feel less enthusiastic.
Yeah.
So they're trying to tap into your enthusiasm. You may find it a little creepy, but this is just what campaigns are designed to do. They need to mobilize supporters to help them get out the vote.
Lori, thank you very much. Mika, let's walk through some of the data gathering process. For instance, the Give $3 meme. We've noticed that both the Obama and Romney campaigns have been asking supporters to donate $3.
Yeah. What's going on there? So, well, first of all, it's fascinating because it used to be that small donations were, you know, $20, $25 was like the minimum that they would ask, hoping they could bump you up higher eventually. And this past year or two, we noticed, and it wasn't even just presidential, it's congressional campaigns as well, advocacy groups have started asking for as little as $3. And why are they doing that? Because it works. Now, one of the dirty little secrets about this process is something called A-B testing. So every email, before it goes out to the big list or all the people they're trying to reach, they send out test versions of these emails to much smaller groups. And one version A is tested against version B. They'll test subject lines. They'll test the layout. They'll test the color. And then depending on what kind of response rate, how many are opened, how many are clicked on, then they'll send them to more people.
So we could be part of a blind study and not know.
Well, it's no longer blind because it's clearly working. What we can see, you know, somebody was making fun of the Obama campaign recently about how much they're begging for money with all these emails. And I thought, well, it must be working because they continue to send them. None of these is – the same is true for, say, Move On or any of these other big groups that have big email lists. They're all doing it. It is a science now, and $3 is obviously a low enough barrier that a lot of people think, what the heck, I'll do it. And then they get your credit card information, and now they have an opportunity to try and upsell you or reach out with a handwritten note, as Lori was just saying.
So basically, this is a gateway to get other information about you, not that they're going to use your credit card or something like that against your knowledge.
No. Look, let's recognize that a lot of what's going on here is just, you know, the sizzle of real politics, right? I mean, if you showed up at a campaign event and took out your pen and signed up on some form, you're giving the campaign permission to contact you too.
Right.
And this is all about permission. The problem with how campaigns and these third-party firms are starting to use big data is that the realm of permission has gotten a little fuzzier. And what they keep saying is, well, don't worry because we're anonymizing how we're mashing up all this data when we collect consumer data and match it against your cookies, match it against your voter file.
But the campaigns aren't doing that, obviously.
Well, the campaigns hire out or they do it internally. We don't know. You see, in the case of the Romney campaign, they're using a firm called Targeted Victory. They've already paid them about $4 million just for these kinds of services. The Obama campaign has built its own data analysis team. So we don't know exactly what they're doing. And there's no reason for them to tell us. We can only infer, right? It's a black box. Some reporters are focusing on it, like us at Tech President. But for the most part, it's all legal. It may not be healthy for democracy. It may not be wise politically. One of the things I'm wondering about is whether there will be a backlash. There was a study 2 weeks ago that the Annenberg School of Communication did where they asked people about the tailoring of political advertising according to their interests. 86% of Americans don't want that done to them. They don't realize it's being done.
Yeah, it is true that they don't like it. On the other hand, if it works, it works. They don't like negative advertising either, but it seems to work. Listeners, call 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. If you think you've been targeted in ways that are maybe a little eerie, there was from a ProPublica database, there was a recent message from Beyonce from the Obama campaign aimed at African American women. Other pitches target Latinos, military families, pet owners. They often come from Barack or Michelle, sometimes from Joe.
Yeah.
And they're very informal with a one word subject like disaster or forward. So they've got the hook, they've got the personality. Is this just adapting time-honored techniques to a new technology? Is this really something that, as you suggest, could hurt democracy?
Well, I think that the in principle, what we have to worry about here is when it's being done non-transparently, number one, okay? So what ProPublica is doing by reverse engineering, they are receiving lots and lots of these tailored emails and then building a database so we can see what the campaign is doing, helps us understand, are we really being segmented in ways that would offend us, right? I mean, it's one thing if this is just being done when you've given the campaign permission, you've signed up and said, I'm a Jewish American, send me emails related to, my, you know, things you that Jews might be interested in. That's an option. I'm on that list. It's different, though, if they've done it without you being aware. For example, if you sign up on Facebook, which everybody uses now, and either the Romney or the Obama campaign app on Facebook, and you give it permission, you may not realize that once you've done that, now they have access to your whole social graph. It isn't just you. It's you and your friends and all of their information that you've made available on Facebook. And if they want, they can place ads on your friends' pages with your picture saying that you support the candidate. And they don't need to ask your permission for that once you've signed up for that app.
Okay. You talked about this Annenberg School survey, which found that Americans roundly rejected targeted political ads. 86% of Americans didn't want it. But it seems that a lot more Americans are creeped out by campaigns targeting ads than ad companies targeting ads. That's 56% are creeped out by that. Or news tailoring their stories. That's 46% are creeped out by that. You know, directed news to their emails.
Which
and
is going
mailboxes.
On now, too.
Sure. So I don't understand. Do you have any guesses as to why the campaigns doing it are creepier than advertisers or news outlets?
Well, I think probably because Americans have a residual civic intuition that their political preferences are a bit more sacred than, you know, what kind of frozen yogurt they like to buy or even, you know, what sorts of news and entertainment they're interested in. We're used to marketing values being encompassing those spaces, whereas politics, I think we'd like to think, is actually about give and take and people coming together as a country, debating the issues and then voting, as opposed to what is going on now. This is like the old selling of the president 2.0.
Are we assuming that this material that's being directed to them is untruthful?
There may well be that, but I think it's more likely to be manipulative than untruthful, which is to say, for example, Harry Reid's campaign just did this in Nevada 2 years ago. They're openly bragging about, for example, if they identified you as a woman, they made sure to target ads to you talking about how his opponent was opposed to breast cancer screening. Or if you were an environmentalist, that his opponent supported putting nuclear waste in Yucca Mountain. Now, all of this is just shrewd political tactics, but when you break people down into these little segments.
I mean, if it's useful information that you care about, you can't care about every issue.
Well, what I find interesting is that we originally thought the web would enhance the democratic process. If you go to a campaign's website now, it isn't really designed to inform you fully about the campaign, about the candidate's positions. The campaign's website is mostly designed to find out information about you so that they can then tailor back at you what they think you want to hear. Now, I don't think pandering I'm not saying it's dishonest, but I am saying pandering to narrow segments can be very, very dangerous. And when it's done without people's understanding and when it's highly expensive to do, I mean, there are defenses against this. You could shut off cookies on all your browsers, for example, and some people are starting to do that, and that would defang some of this. But most of us never read the terms of service when we sign up somewhere, never check the privacy policies. You have very little awareness, I bet, just how big a data trail you're leaving and who is sniffing around it to use it to say what and do what to you.
Let's go to Daniel in Washington Heights. Daniel?
Yeah, hi. My question is, well, how is this any different than vaulting? And vaulting is when a campaign hires a group of people to go door to door and ask specific questions in a given amount of time directly of the voters. Say they have a list of Democratic voters. Is that your guest here is putting a very nefarious twist on the whole thing. There's nothing nefarious going on, and there's nothing wrong. And I think we all know, as voters, when we're contacted by people, I professionally vaulted myself and walked 4 out of 5 boroughs in New York, and people want to give you this. In fact, I would think the other argument should be the bigger thing is that people aren't telling you the truth as much as you would like on the Internet. So you have to go back to the old hand-to-hand, door-to-door questioning. And that's what I had to say. So how is this any different than vaulting, meaning collecting the data and putting it in a box for
this
our campaign?
In fact, what you're describing is part of this larger process of collecting, sifting, and then acting on top of all of this big data. And look, no question, if you think that the only point of political campaigns is to do whatever they can legally to win, then none of this should really bother you, right? Because this is just a very, very sophisticated form of marketing and then analyzing what the data tells you, connecting up data points that an individual may not realize. You know, they've left all this information out there. Look, when you go shopping in the supermarket and you swipe that little card, you're telling a marketing company what products you like to buy. And to be sure, they will use that. But doesn't it creep you out a little bit, for example, when a company like Target figures out before a woman even knows that she's pregnant, right, that they should start changing what kind of marketing they send to that household because they're about to have a big life event happen. That's where we're going.
I think what we need is our more educated consumers of information, and so that when these messages come to them, they know why and wherefore and where from. I think that would be really useful. The first time I was ever creeped out by targeted marketing wasn't that long ago, was when I was 49, the ARP sent me a note. I always thought, you know, when Osama bin Laden turned 50, they should have just put ARP on
your birth date information is a public data, and that's why they get that, and we all get that annoying card in the mail. I got mine not that long ago. Look, the part of the point here is to say, what else could we have with this amazing thing called the web and our democracy? What we're seeing the campaigns do is just the natural outgrowth, as you said before, of big money chasing after a shrinking pool of persuadable voters in the hopes of tipping the election one way or another. What I would also like to see not only is voters being fully informed about what campaigns are doing with this information, right? If they're going to ask commercial advertisers to be more transparent, so should the campaigns. But I'd also like to see voters empowered and connected and actually enabled, not micro-targeted just to your narrow point of view, but exposed to other points of view. And, you know, the campaign.
Oh, please.
Yes. Well, this is what the web makes possible, right? That's why in 2004 and 2008, when we talked about the potential of social, we thought that what we might get was a bigger, better conversation. And instead, now what we're getting is something that looks like a lot of top-down manipulation.
Mika, thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Mika Sifri is the co-founder of the Personal Democracy Forum, which looks at the intersection of politics and technology. May all your data remain ever private. And thanks again.
Thanks.
I'm Brooke Gladstone in for Brian Lehrer on WNYC and WNYC.org. Coming up next, a follow-up on our noisy conversation yesterday about a new initiative to promote breastfeeding in New York City hospitals. I'll talk with a representative from the city's health department.